Want to go upstairs? Not just yet. I'll sleep here on the sofa. I'll be fine.
The butler left, silent as a shadow, then returned a moment later with a downy white blanket and a flowered pillow. Joanna watched him place them on the end of the sofa, then leave the room again.
I should cry, she told herself. I should let it come out. Lev didn't deserve this. It was me he was after. Lev died trying to save my life.
Instead of crying, she reached over to the phone console and told its voice recognition system,
Get Seigo Yamagata for me. No intermediaries. This is an emergency call for him and no one else.
It's time to end this war, Joanna told herself. Editing booth.
Moonbase has survived the Peacekeeper's missile attack, Edith was saying into her microphone. But not unscathed. The first missile destroyed Moonbase's backup power generator. That was a conventional explosive warhead, and it hit the buried generator precisely.
The display screens running across the top of the control board showed the quiet frenzy of Moonbase's control center. The crowd milling around in the cave, a view of the crater floor where Wixon and his crew were riding back to the main airlock in a jouncing tractor, and the scene from Mount Jaeger showing the Peacekeeper Assault Force's vehicles trundling up toward Wojciechowicz Pass. Selecting the view of Wixon's tractor, Edith continued without missing a beat.
The UN's second missile was a nuclear weapon aimed to wipe out Moonbase's main electrical power solar panels, which are spread across the floor of the crater. The people here call them solar farms. Thanks to the brilliant work of a handful of scientists and technicians, she praised Wixon and his people,
explained how the beam gun had deactivated the nuclear warhead and turned it into a dud. But her eyes were pinned on the screen showing the Peacekeeper's vehicles creeping up the outer slope of the Ringwall Mountains. Vince Falcone was watching the same view, sitting at a console in the control center. He was sweating, perspiration beading his upper lip and forehead, trickling down his swarthy cheeks. This has got to work, he kept telling himself. It's got to work. Otherwise, they'll be able to bring their missile launchers right up to our front door and blast it open. For the 20th time in the past half hour, he checked the circuitry to the microwave antennas atop Mount Jaeger. One of the bright young short-timers had done a computer simulation that showed the microwaves would be reflected by the rock walls of Wojo Pass and effectively reach all the foam gel goo they had spread there. The rock absorbed some of the microwave energy, of course, but reflected enough to get the job done. Falcone hoped. He looked across the row of consoles to where Doug Stavanger was sitting, deep in conversation with somebody on his screens. The kid's got all this responsibility on his shoulders, Falcone told himself. Least I can do is get this mother-loving phone gel to work. He returned his attention to the screen showing the approaching Peacekeeper force and felt a shock race through him.
They're splitting up, Falcone saw.
The vehicles were dividing into two columns, one of them coming up toward Wojo Pass, but the other snaking around the base of the Ringwall Mountains toward the steeper notch some 24 kilometers farther away. And it looked like a small party was starting out on foot to climb Mount Jaeger, where the microwave antennas were.
Stupid, shit-faced bastards, Falcone raged, offering the assessment both to the Peacekeepers and his own short-sightedness. They're only sending part of their forces across Wojo. The rest of them will get through without being stopped by the goo, and if they knock out the antennas up on Jaeger, the goo won't do us any fucking good at all.
The earphone of the headpiece clamped over his thickly curling hair suddenly crackled. Vince, this is Doug Stavanger. They divided their force.
Yeah, I can see it.
It looks like that second group's heading for the northwest notch.
And they're sending a team up Jaeger.
They're going to get through with no trouble, aren't they? Falcone nodded bitterly.
Even if we could spray some goo over that pass, the microwaves from Jaeger couldn't reach it. Assuming they don't disable the antennas before we want to use them.
Well, what can we do? Doug asked. Falcone wished he had an answer. We should have known they'd split their forces, Doug raged at himself. I should have figured that the Peacekeepers wouldn't send their whole force through Wojo. That was wishful thinking, nothing but wishful thinking.
It's not so bad, Gordette said, pulling up a chair to sit beside him.
Bad enough, said Doug.
Their main force is coming across Wojo Pass, Gordette said, pointing to the screen. The second force is a lot smaller, looks like.
But if they disable the antennas...
It'll take them an hour to get to the top of Jaeger at least.
But still, Gordette said,
count the missile launchers. That's their heavy artillery. Looks to me like almost all of them are coming through Wojo.
Doug studied the screens for a few moments.
Maybe the secondary force is going to head for the mass driver. Gordette shrugged, then said, whoever's in charge of the peacekeepers probably wants to keep the secondary force as a reserve.
Doug wished he could believe Gordette's assessment. He's just trying to cheer me up, Doug thought, trying to lighten the load.
It doesn't matter what the secondary force's mission is. Once their main group gets in trouble in Wojo Pass, they'll still have these other troops to attack us, with all their weapons.
Maybe Falcone was right, and we ought to fry them as they come through Wojo Pass. Get them before they knock out the antennas. Kill as many of them as we can while we've got the chance. They're here to kill us. They killed Lev. They tried to kill Mom. Why shouldn't we kill them?
The blinking message light on the console told him that people were waiting to talk with him. He pulled up the list on the comm screen. Wixon, Edith, Chris Cardenas down in the infirmary, four others.
Edith.
Doug recalled her urging against killing any of the peacekeepers.
She's right, he knew.
Kill some of their troops and the whole world will turn against us. They'll keep sending armies here until they beat us. Foray won't stop until he wins. Not if he has the world's public opinion behind him.
And once we start sending coffins Earthside, world public opinion will swing totally against us, no matter how much people may be rooting for us now.
Beat them without killing them, even though they're trying to kill us.
He had put through a call to Savannah earlier, but it had not been answered so far.
Is Mom all right? What happened down there? Who killed Lev? Is Mom safe?
They should have stayed here, Doug told himself. Then he realized the absurdity of it.
Yes, stay here, where all we have to worry about is being attacked by a small army of peacekeeper troops.
Looking at his top left screen, he saw that the first of the peacekeeper vehicles was already entering Wojciechowicz Pass.
Doug glanced over at Falcone, staring grimly at the same view on his console.
Gordette was right. Those troopers climbing Jaeger won't get to the antennas for another hour at least.
He got up from his chair, spine creaking after being seated for so long, and walked stiffly to Falcone's post.
Wait until you've got as many in the trap as possible, then spring it.
Falcone nodded without taking his eyes from his screens. They had been over this 100 times at least.
It's your show now, Vince, he said, gripping Falcone's burly shoulder.
Right, boss, said Falcone, his eyes still fixed on his screens.
Colonel Giap had learned long ago not to be the first in line of march through enemy territory. His tractor was the third in line as they threaded up the flank of the mountains and into the narrow defile of the pass.
Force B report, he said into his helmet microphone.
All his communications were relayed through the L1 station, hovering nearly 40,000 kilometers above. There was a noticeable, annoying little lag as the electronic signals bounced back and forth.
Force B reporting, crackled in his earphones. No opposition. Proceeding on schedule.
Good.
Report any problems immediately, said Giap.
Yes, sir.
The colonel nodded inside his helmet. Keeping to schedule was important. He had planned the conquest of Moonbase down to the minutest details, and included every contingency he could imagine in his plans. The nuclear bomb did not go off. Moonbase still enjoyed its full capacity of electrical power. Giap had included that possibility in his planning. It made no difference. His primary force would batter down their main airlock and enter the garage area precisely on schedule, while Force B deployed on the crater floor as a strategic reserve after sending a small contingent to take the mass driver, which Giap expected to be undefended. His special team of mountain climbers would disable all of Moonbase's communications antennas, cutting off the rebels' reports to the news media back on Earth. Foray had insisted on that, and for once Giap agreed with the Secretary General. Cut out their tongues,